Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gopamanandi Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Guru Garanga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 9, Text 12. Nati prasidati tato pachito pacharar. Nati prasidati tato pachito pacharar. Aradita suraganar ridibada kamai. Aradita suraganar ridibada kamai. Yat sarva bhuta dayaya sarala bhayaiko. Yat sarva bhuta dayaya sarala bhayaiko. Nana Janeshva Vahita Suradantaratma. Nana Janeshva Vahita Suradantaratma. Nati prasidati tato pachitai pacharai. Aradita suraganar ridibada kamyai. Yat sarva bhuta dayaya saralabhyayaiko. Nana janeshva vahita suradantaratma. Vaishnavis. Never. Ati, very much. Prasidati, become satisfied. Tata, as much as. Upachita, by pompous arrangement. Upacharai, with much worshipable paraphernalia. Aradhitaha, being worshipped. Suraganai, by the celestial demigods. Riddhibada kamai, with hearts full of all sorts of material desires. Yat, that which. Sarva, all. Bhuta, living entities. Dayaya, to show them causeless mercy. Asat, non-devotee. Alabhyaya, not being achieved. Ekaha, one without a second. Nana, various. Janeshu, in the living entities. Avahitaha, perceived. Surit, well-wishing friend. Antaha, within. Atma, supersoul. Translation. My Lord, this is Lord Brahma speaking. My Lord, you are not very much satisfied by the worship of the demigods who arranged for your worship very pompously with various paraphernalia, but who are full of material hankerings. You are situated in everyone's heart as the supersoul just to show your causeless mercy, and you are the eternal well-wisher, but you are unavailable for the non-devotee. Just before I read the purport, just can make one brief little comment here. It's an interesting translation because it's almost like suggesting a slight contradiction. In the second sentence, it's saying that Krishna he's situated within the heart as the supersoul just to show his causeless mercy. He's the eternal well-wisher. But even before the sentence finishes, it says he's not available to the non-devotee. Okay, So he's not available, despite the fact that he's just there to show causeless mercy, but he's not available to the non-devotee. And in the sentence before that, it's saying that he's not very satisfied with the Sakama devotees, the demigods, even though, despite the fact that they're worshiping him very pompously with various paraphernalia. So, hey, what's going on here? I mean, he's there to show causeless mercy, but he's not available to the non-devotees, and he's not satisfied with the demigods who are worshiping him pompously with different paraphernalia. Okay, well, that's why we have purports. So now we're going to read the purport. I just wanted to kind of highlight that, those thoughts, you know, make it, and we're going to hear how Prabhupada explains this translation now, purport. The demigods in the celestial heavenly planets who are appointed administrators of the material affairs are also devotees of the Lord. But at the same time, they have desires for material opulence and sense gratification. The Lord is so kind that he awards them all sorts of material happiness, more than they can desire. But he is not satisfied with them because they are not pure devotees. The Lord does not want any one of his innumerable sons, in parentheses, the living entities, to remain in the material world of threefold miseries, to perpetually suffer the material pangs of birth, death, old age, and disease. The demigods in the heavenly planets, and many devotees on this planet also, want to remain in the material world as devotees of the Lord, and take advantage of material happiness. They do so at the risk of falling down to the lowest status of existence, and this makes the Lord dissatisfied with them. Pure devotees are not desirous of any material enjoyment, nor are they averse to it. They completely dovetail their desires with the desires of the Lord and perform nothing on their personal account. Arjuna is a good example. On his own sentiment, due to family affection, Arjuna did not want to fight. But finally, after hearing Srimad Bhagavad Gita, he agreed to fight in the interests of the Lord. Therefore, the Lord is very much satisfied with pure devotees because they do not act for sense gratification, but only in terms of the Lord's desire. As Paramatma or Supersoul, he is situated in everyone's heart, always giving everyone the chance of good counsel. Thus, everyone should take the opportunity and render transcendental loving service to him wholly and solely. The non-devotees, however, are neither like the demigods nor like the pure devotees, but are averse to the transcendental relationship with the Lord. They have revolted against the Lord and must perpetually undergo the reactions of their own activities. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 11, states, Yeyatamam papajante tam stataiva bhajamiyaham. Although the Lord is equally kind to every living being, the living beings, for their own part, are able to please the Lord to either a greater or lesser extent. End quote. The demigods are called Sakama devotees, or devotees with material desires in mind, while the pure devotees are called Nishkama devotees because they have no desires for their personal interests. The Sakama devotees are self-interested because they do not think of others, and therefore they are not able to satisfy the Lord perfectly, whereas the pure devotees take the missionary responsibility of turning non-devotees into devotees, and they are therefore able to satisfy the Lord more than the demigods. The Lord is unmindful of the non-devotees, although he is sitting within everyone's heart as well-wisher and super-soul. However, he also gives them a chance to receive his mercy through his pure devotees who are engaged in missionary activities. Sometimes the Lord himself descends for missionary activities, as he did in the form of Lord Chaitanya, but mostly he sends his bona fide representatives. And thus he shows his causeless mercy toward the non-devotees. The Lord is so satisfied with his pure devotees that he wants to give them the credit for missionary success, although he could do the work personally. This is the sign of his satisfaction with his pure Nishkama devotees compared to the Sakama devotees. By such transcendental activities, the Lord simultaneously becomes free from the charge of partiality and exhibits his pleasure with the devotees. Now, a question arises. If the Lord is sitting in the hearts of the non-devotees, why are they not moved to become devotees? Actually, a similar question was raised in the purport I spoke from the last time I gave class about a week ago. It says, the next question is why people are against the auspicious activities as chanting and hearing the glories of the pastimes of the Lord, which can bring total freedom from the cares and anxieties of material existence. So the same question is being raised again by Prabhupada. He says, it may be answered that the stubborn non-devotees are like the barren land or alkaline field where no agricultural activities can be successful. As part and parcel of the Lord, every living entity has a minute quantity of independence. And by misuse of this minute independence, the non-devotees commit offense after offense to both the Lord and his pure devotees engaged in missionary work. As a result of such acts, they become as barren as an alkaline field where there is no strength to produce. Om Aginata Madam Dashaj and Anjana Shalakaya, Chakshurun Melitamiena, Tasmai Shri Gudave Namaha, Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupakadamayam Dirati Swaparantikam. So, paragraph by paragraph, Prabhupada really kind of does explain. Paragraph by paragraph, Prabhupada explains that the seemingly paradoxical statement of the translation, how Krishna is causelessly merciful. He's in everyone's heart just to show, Prabhupada says, just to show his causeless mercy, but he's not available to the non-devotees, and he's not very pleased with the Sakama devotees of the demigods. So in the first paragraph of the purport here, Prabhupada explains why he's not very satisfied with the Sakama devotees, and does that in the last sentence. Because of their attachment to material advantages, they will remain here in the material world. They'll remain in the cycle of birth and death. And even they'll even be doing that at the risk of falling down to lower statuses of life, and that makes the Lord very dissatisfied with them. And then in the second paragraph, Prabhupada explains about the attitude of the pure devotees. The pure devotees, they're not interested in material enjoyment. They could take it or leave it. Literally, they could. And that's what Prabhupada says. If it comes, fine. If they just accept it as Krishna's mercy and they just go on with their service. If it's not there, fine. That's Krishna's mercy and they just go on with their service. They're interested in pleasing Krishna. They're not concerned about material enjoyment one way or the other. And so that's their attitude. And Krishna's very pleased by that, and he gives them intelligence how to always increase their service. And then in the third paragraph, very short paragraph, Prabhupada just gives a sort of a nutshell understanding of why Krishna is indifferent, at least initially, why Krishna is indifferent towards the non-devotees. Why? Because they've revolted against him, and therefore they have to get the consequences of their misuse of their free will, which is to perpetually undergo the reactions of their own activities. So I thought of an analogy that kind of at least helped me understand this a little bit better. Just like you have ISKCON. So Prabhupada was like, the equivalent of Krishna within ISKCON. He appointed different people to be like GBCs, temple presidents, this, that, the other thing, okay? So he was pleased. He was pleased when those disciples of his, took up those responsibilities. That's pleasing. So he's pleased by that. But he wasn't pleased if, in the course of executing their service, it became obvious that some of these disciples, in these different positions of management or leadership, manifested symptoms of being attached materially in some way or another. So that wasn't pleasing to him. See? Why? Because he's understanding that, well, if it's good that they're taking the responsibilities I'm giving them, and but if they have material attachments, they're going to have to come back. They're going to have to take birth again in the material world. So You know, in the same way, Prabhupada wasn't happy about that aspect of it. So, you know, Krishna has that same attitude towards the demigods. He's kind of pleased with the fact that they're worshiping him pompously and with all different paraphernalia. He's not displeased with that, but what he's displeased with is he knows that in their heart they're maintaining all sorts of different material desires, and that's going to cause them to have to stay in the cycle of birth and death, and even at the risk of going down into lower statuses of existence. So he's not pleased by that. And as far as the non-devotees go, Krishna's also concerned about them, but he actually, there's an interesting point here Prabhupada makes in the purport that he allows the devotees to deal with that. And just like, you know, once again, using that analogy. So Prabhupada was concerned with delivering, elevating everybody, elevating all sorts of souls, not just his disciples, but he was concerned with elevating people who weren't his disciples. But in the case of Prabhupada, there's a limit to what one person can do, right? Prabhupada dealt directly with his disciples, and he delegated the responsibility of elevating the general people, and people in general, you know, the mass, to his disciples. Mostly because of a practical consideration, which was, as I said, there's a limit to what one person can do. Here another consideration is being pointed out by Prabhupada in the purport that the Lord is so satisfied with his pure devotees that he wants to give them the credit for his missionary success, although he could do the work personally. So maybe that was also part of Prabhupada's motive. I don't know. You know, that he wanted to see his disciples get the credit for spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. So, you know, distributing all the books and so forth like that. In any event, so, but the point is that Krishna is acting in such a way as to elevate everybody. And today actually is a good example of that. You know, what happened today, Krishna, today is actually the actual day of Govardhan Puja, Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. And that this today is actually a good example of that point. That, you know, it's not contradictory. Krishna, he benefited, for instance, Indra was a Sakama devotee, okay, to start off with. And he was slipping down into the category of a non-devotee by his behavior. He plummeted into the category of non-devotee by his behavior, topmost non-devotee, trying to destroy all the residents of Vrindavan, like that. And but Krishna, by lifting Govardhan Hill, he benefited Indra, because Indra, he got taught a good lesson, punished and taught a good lesson. But as a result of what happened, and of course the residents of Vrindavan, they were saved by Krishna, and their love for Krishna increased. See, so everybody was benefited by what Krishna did. Krishna knows how to manage, in other words. Indra was better off after the whole incident than he was before. What to speak of, you know, being a non-devotee, Krishna gave him a chance to, you know, by what happened, as a result of what happened, I'm sure Indra made advancement in his attitude of devotional service towards Krishna. And the residents of Vrindavan, they also, their devotional love for Krishna was enhanced as a result of what happened. So Krishna knows how to manage. And we always have to remember that. You know, sometimes it might seem like something might seem a little contradictory. Like, for instance, I was reading the Bhagavatam a couple of days ago, and in the fourth canto, I was reading this one paragraph where Prabhupada was saying, he was pointing out how is it that Ajamil, he was so sinful. You know, he fell down when he was, I don't know if there's any place where Prabhupada gives the exact age, but he was a young man. Let's say he was 18, just for, you know, ballpark figures, just for argument's sake. And he had his last child when he was 88. So at least for 70 solid years, Ajamil was doing nothing but engaging in sinful activities. From the time he hooked up with that prostitute, Asuja, whatever you want to refer to her, for 70 years he was, you know, it's described how he maintained himself. He was a dacoit. He used to attack people on the road. He used to cheat people, steal from them. You name it, he did it. He, forget about brahminical principles. That was just out the window. He was like, right? He was a dacoit for 70 years. And all he did was, and he wasn't even intentional, at the time of his death, he called out for his son, who he happened to name Narayan, just like inadvertently, and because of that he got saved. because of that, the Yamadutas came for him. Everybody knows the story. And the Vishnuduta said, no, chill out, guys. You know, hang on. This is, you know, he's okay. He got a pass. And he went back to, he got a chance to repent and then go back to Vaikuntha shortly thereafter. So, but on the other hand, you have somebody like Daksha, okay. He was a Prajapati. And it's described how he was constantly performing sacrifices, you know, worshiping Vishnu and, you know, in the Shalagram, Shila, et cetera, et cetera. And he just made, somebody could say, well, he had a bad relationship with Lord Shiva, so he made the mistake. He was offensive to Lord Shiva. So, well, actually, it wasn't just a little mistake. I mean, Lord Shiva is Vaishnavanam to Yatasambhu, the topmost Vaishnav. So he did commit an offense to the topmost Vaishnav. But still, he was, you know, he was pretty taken to task. He was pretty severely punished for what happened. He got his head chopped off. But somebody could think, well, you know, geez, Krishna is kind of like, no, Krishna knows exactly what he's doing. And Prabhupada, and that purport, that same purport I'm referring to, Prabhupada concludes by saying that the devotee, he has that faith that whatever Krishna is doing, it's perfect. Whatever Krishna knows how to manage better than anybody. He manages perfectly. And so the devotee takes responsibility for what's happening in his life. He doesn't see, well, I've been trying so hard. I'm such a sincere devotee. How is this happening to me? How is this these reverse things happening to me in my life? Does Krishna really know how to manage? Does Krishna really know what he's doing? Krishna knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly how he's doing, and everything he's doing everything in such a way that will be ultimately beneficial for every living entity. That's the meditation. We have to always remember Krishna's doing everything that will be ultimately beneficial, not immediately pleasing, but ultimately beneficial to every living entity. And therefore, and Prabhupada says, in that verse, in that paragraph I was referring to that I was reading, Prabhupada quotes this verse from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, I'm reading from the translation from the Nectar of Instruction here, Nectar of Devotion, sorry. It says, in the 10th canto of 14th chapter, verse 8, it is said, my dear Lord, and Prabhupada says, this is the devotee's meditation. He takes shelter of this understanding. My dear Lord, any person who is constantly awaiting your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon him and who goes on suffering the resultant actions of his past misdeeds, as he takes responsibility for whatever's happening to him, and offering you respectful obeisances from the core of his heart, is surely eligible to become liberated, for it has become his rightful claim. And Prabhupada says, one sentence, he says, this statement of the Srimad Bhagavatam should be the guide of all devotees. So that should be our way of understanding this verse. You know, it might sound like, oh, well, how is it? You know, Krishna's, where were we? It says he's the eternal well-wisher, but, and, you know, he's causelessly merciful, but he's not available to the non-devotees. He's never. Krishna knows exactly what he's doing. He's managing it in such a way that it's going to be ultimately beneficial for the non-devotees, for the Sakama devotees, the devotees with material desires, and for the pure devotees. He's got it all worked out. We don't have to worry. In the case of the non-devotees, a little intervention is required. I looked up Prabhupada uses this example about an alkaline field. And he makes it sound kind of hopeless. In today's purport, Prabhupada makes it sound kind of hopeless, you know, for the alkaline living entities. He says here, due to their misuse of their independence, the non-devotees commit offense after offense to both the Lord and his pure devotees engaged in missionary work. As a result of such acts, they become as barren as an alkaline field where there is no strength to produce. But as I mentioned, this is very similar to that paragraph is very similar to the purport I gave class on last week, and it does say there in that purport, it says, the Lord's pure devotees, however, take compassion on such unfortunate persons, on such alkaline field persons, and in a missionary spirit, they try to persuade them in the line of devotional service. And I looked it up on the internet. Yeah, alkaline fields, it's a result of too much in the periodic table, they have the alkaline metals. It's too much. What was it now? Calcium. Sodium. Sodium was the main one. So much. Too much sodium. Too much calcium. Too much magnesium. And the result is it makes the ground very hard, clay-like. So it's very difficult for irrigation. When it rains, it just slides off the thing. And even when you try to irrigate that kind of soil, it's very difficult. But it can be done. They could put organic compost on it, such as orange peels, lemon peels. In other words, even in this example, there's hope for the alkaline soil. You got to work with it. So in the same way, there's hope for the non-devotees. If the pure devotees intervene, then, as it says here, by the grace of the pure devotees, such unfortunate men can be elevated to the position of transcendental service. So that's Krishna's program, and he gives the credit to his devotees. So I will stop there. Does anybody have any question? Quick question. No question. Nothing. Okay, we have to stop right there. So I hope that was okay. Thank you very much, everybody. Grantarod Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Hare Krishna. So we're about to begin the worship of Govardhan Hill, and the devotees will circumambulate Govardhan Hill. And then we're going to offer an artik like that. And then after that, we're going to distribute in the temple room what we offer to Govardhan Srila.